Hey, what's up, everybody? My name's MJ, and you're listening to the MTG in Quarantine podcast. As usual, I'd like to give a shout-out to my local game store, Guardian Games. You can find Guardian Games on the web at ggportland.com. Today's episode is another episode of the Control Room podcast series, where I invite my friend Ryan, aka Sodium Chloride, on the MTG in Quarantine Discord to join me to talk about all things Magic the Gathering. So I'd like to reintroduce my friend Ryan back to the show. Hey Ryan, how's it going tonight?
It's going pretty well.
All right, that's great to hear. So we've had some extremely exciting news this past week. Wizards has spoiled the first few cards of the new Strixhaven set that is slated to drop in April. And we're going to spend some time on tonight's episode talking about what we think about the few cards that have been spoiled thus far of the new Wizarding School set. Sound good to you?
Yep.
All right. So Strixhaven is going to be based on the concept of the Wizarding School. Obviously, I'm not going to be naming any names on here, but obviously many come to mind. And there's going
just
to be...
Just one come to mind.
Okay, but...
Not many.
Yeah, depends on how far you go back in this kind
one of... One specific piece of speculative... fiction literature, one
Come on,
particular
Ryan.
Series
it's not...
of books and movies.
You know, a new media empire, but whatever. Enough about this is different. This is Strixhaven, so we're just going to be talking about...
Because it's not set in Britain.
True. Very true. But anyway, enough about that. Strixhaven, if you have not had the opportunity to hear about that, is going to be cut down into five distinct colleges, which are using the existing two-color Ravnican guild pairings. And we're going to be going through each one of these in a little bit of detail, talking about what their colors are, talking about a little bit of what we know from the Magic homepage, and as well as some of our thoughts on the command cycle of cards that have been released, and then just kind of see what we're excited about the new Strixhaven set. So if without further ado, we're going to start off with Lorehold. Now, Lorehold is going to be the red-white, so the Boros color pairing, and according to the website, they are anyone who are Loreholds are diligent researchers and daring adventurers. Passionate scholars, obsessed with history, they explore the past by poring over archaeological artifacts and summoning long-dead spirits. So, and their motto is Leave No Stone Unturned. So effectively, as I've seen it on the Twitters the last couple of days, this is effectively kind of looked at as like the philosophy slash history kids. And as someone who actually does hold a bachelor's degree in history, I feel this doubly so, and especially as a dedicated Boros player, I feel this three times so. Is that I really like where they're taking this house here, just because it basically takes what Boros is always known for, which is combat, and it kind of turns that on its head in a lot of ways, is that instead of just fighting just because there's some sort of purpose to fighting for justice and whatnot, you're also kind of taking a look at history and you're using that for knowledge. And again, knowledge is something that Magic's history has always been taken by the blue color, and especially when drawing cards to gain your knowledge. But it's interesting to see that the two colors that technically draw the least number of cards in the game, which are red and white, are now going to at least have some bit of a focus, at least in theme here. We haven't seen the cards yet, so we're not quite sure if that's gonna hold up when we see the whole set. But at least from where I stand or where we sit right now, it looks like Lorehold may have some interesting new avenues to maybe give these colors a little bit of card draw. And so we have Lorehold's Command, which is the one card we have from this pairing, again from the weird kind of Gatling gun thing going on in the artwork here. Lorehold Command is an instant for 3 red and a white, and reads Choose 2. You can create a 3/2 red and white spirit creature token. Creatures you control get +1/+0 and gain indestructible and haste until end of turn. Lorehold Command deals 3 damage to any target. Target player gains 3 life, or, the interesting thing here, sacrifice permanent, then draw 2 cards. So, Ryan, again, while a lot of the modes on Lorehold Command definitely seem to kind of fit along with the standard Boros color pairing, especially with the Boros charm-like effect, getting the power boost, or putting a creature on the battlefield, or even just doing a standard burn damage, like a Lightning Helix effect, what do you think about this house? And more so, what do you think about that last line of text about sacrificing a permanent to draw two cards? This kind of starts putting us into a weird little, like, Boros sacrifice phase, and I just wanted to hear your thoughts on that.
That's pretty freaking weird, because that might fit in mono red, that last line there, although that's also pretty rare. That's more of a Jund thing, or, you know, maybe a Rakdos thing. Really, pretty much any black color pairing kind of thing, sacrificing a permanent to draw cards. It's kind of unusual seeing that on Boros. At least I'm not really aware of any other card. I know that there are some mono white cards where you, like, you can sack the creature and make another creature indestructible, you know, which represents a creature like taking a bullet for the president, you know,
something like Dauntless Bodyguard or Aegis Angel, for instance, which allows another target creature to be indestructible until Aegis Angels leave the battlefield, something like that. Yeah.
Yeah, so we see other sac effects in white occasionally for things like that, but not usually. You don't usually see sac effects in any white inclusive pairing or wedge or shard. You don't generally see sacrifice effects unless that wedge also includes the color black. So that means Mardu, that means Jund, that means Jesus, what's the one from Alara again? Oh, Esper, of course, too.
Yeah, Esper.
And also the other one from Alara that has, that's black inclusive. I can't remember that one, but
Orzhov
and Aristocrats. Yeah, you're going to see a lot of that in Orzhov. You're going to see a lot of that in Rakdos. Lesser extent, you know, you're going to see that in Dimir. Definitely see it in Golgari. I've never seen that in Boros. So it would be just as weird to me seeing that in Azorius. Like, for me. So
yeah.
I don't know if this represents new territory for white on the color pie, or if this is just maybe a reimagining of the Boros color pairing, like their combined color pie, like whether that's now considered kind of like an acceptable place for them to go, where like you're callously sacrificing your own creatures and things in exchange for a short-term profit. That's kind of odd, but I'm not going to judge too hard, because that is pretty bomb effect right there, you know?
Yeah, and something that's interesting about this being in Boros especially is the fact that you're probably, I mean, at least the way I build Boros is I like building Boros token decks. Yeah, so you're able to sacrifice one of those, let's say, 1/1 soldiers to get two cards, in which case you've effectively paid 5 mana, I guess, but you've paid to get a Vampiric Rites sort of effect out of mono black. And you're sacrificing a creature, or again, since you could sacrifice a permanent, you could sacrifice a land. It doesn't really matter. You can just do a whole bunch of things because you're sacrificing a permanent. I did see something on Twitter the other day talking about Mardu treasures, possibility that white will start going towards kind of a treasure route. Again, I don't quite recall hearing all of that on Gavin Verhey's Good Morning Magic last week regarding mono white.
Yeah.
But it is entirely possible that white will start getting some more treasure payoffs here. So you could even sacrifice one of those to this card to draw two cards, in which case you're gaining pretty good value, all things considered.
I mean, right now, in terms of the treasure cards I've seen, it seems to be mostly centered in black or red, particularly in red with treasure making, because, you know, red also has problems with ramp. White does too. But I haven't seen a whole lot of treasure cards in white. And also, it is worth pointing out that Lorehold Command doesn't have a treasure-generating mode on here. But another one of these commands from another one of these wizarding houses does have the ability to generate a treasure token. And that color pairing does not include white. So I think it'll be interesting to see that.
Yeah, and we'll get into that in a moment here, but I just wanted to get your thoughts on Lorehold in general. Is this, like I mentioned, is this kind of an interesting reimagining of Boros, or do you expect pretty much the same standard combat-centric red-white pairing?
Well, that is the question. Will we see a combat-centric either white weenie or Gotal, like, big beater strategy from it, or will we have it explore some territory that Wizards has kind of explored a little bit, which is Boros spell slinging, there have been a little. There is that one commander that you know, what was it again? Lifelink from spells and damage from spells. Can't remember which one that was. Mm-hmm. That Boros commander. There have been elements of that. Same thing with Feather the Redeemed.
Yep.
Of that spell slingy kind of thing, where it's utilizing the strengths of red as kind of an argument to include kind of like red burn, but it's got life gain tacked onto it kind of thing. You know what I mean? So it's like, oh, I'm damaging you, and I'm also gaining life.
Or Leader's Helix, too.
Yeah, and Lightning Helix. Same kind of deal. Well, there isn't a whole lot of that in Boros, but that is a part of it. Are they going to go more for that? Given that this is a wizarding set, and given that it seems to focus on magic and wizards, I would be a little surprised if all of the cards from the Boros house are just considered a big buff swordsman guys. That would be kind of disappointing to me, and I would be interested in seeing if they expand spell slinging from is it, you know, into these other colors, especially Boros and Golgari, which is another one of these wizarding ecology things. Another color pairing that's not known for slinging a lot of instants and sorceries, exactly. Known a little more for other kinds of shenanigans.
Yep.
So I'm cautiously optimistic that they might add some more interesting toys and maybe a little bit more diversity to commander strategies when it comes to this, but I don't know. I don't know on the basis of the information we have, you know?
Yeah, that seems fair. Yeah, so let's spin our wheels over to what you just mentioned. We'll go over to the Golgari house, which is the other side of the MJ lexicon, since I love building Boros and I love building Golgari, one more than the other, because I kind of suck at building Golgari these days, but, you know, that's neither here nor there. So we're going to be moving over to the college known as Witherbloom. And according to the website, their motto is get your hands dirty. So apparently they draw power from the essence of living beings, whether that means enhancing nature or exploiting it. They are most at home riding zombie crocs, picking herbs for potions, and hanging out in their swamp making grim jokes. So just from that example right there, this sounds like kind of a weird academic way of explaining exactly what Golgari already does. They're basically working with zombies. There's going to be hopefully some zombie payoffs here, a whole bunch of like weird potions, kill spells, things like that. Kind of like the, trying to think of the kind of draw to poison type card from Call Time that I cannot remember the name of at the top of my head, but just kind of goes along with the whole Sip of Hemlock bit, along with Sip of Hemlock from Theros set, and just, you know, working with the green-black pairing here. So at least to me, this sounds like pretty much the same old standard Golgari, which is fine with me, but if they do add some spell slinging effects, that would also be quite interesting, because if there's something Golgari really struggles with, it's dealing with threats immediately. And it seems to me like this could be a perfect opportunity for Golgari to get a whole bunch of very low CMC cards that could potentially have some big time effects. So the card for Witherbloom is called Witherbloom Command, is in sorcery for black and a green, and is choose two. Target player mills three cards, then you return a land card from your graveyard to your hand. And again, it doesn't have to be you milling, but typically you're probably going to want to. You can destroy target non-creature, non-land permanent with mana value two or less. Target creature gets -3/-1 until end of turn, so just like Golgari, Charm just is -3 instead of -1. And target opponent loses 2 life and you gain 2 life. So again, this seems like a very simple Golgari card. Everything that's on here basically fits within the existing pairing. So I think that's where we're really going to have to see what the set does with this pairing. Because again, this is effectively what Golgari already does.
Yeah, and I think a lot of these things are things that Golgari already does. Yeah, at its most elemental level. Although I noticed that one of the available options isn't generating like a 2/2 zombie token or something. Or like, I noticed the one where it mills 3 cards and then you return a land card from your graveyard to your hand. It's not any card, it's a land card specifically, which suggests like lands recursion. I note here that the other abilities aren't there's that's the only dredge ability kind of here on that, you know, and that's the only appears to be the only one that actually has to do with the graveyard out of all four modes. So the other ones feel a lot more like black modes actually than the first one, which has kind of more of a green feel, because it's that one's kind of like a renewal kind of ability, right? I think what would be interesting to explore is instead of them doing zombies, you know, which has been done a lot, zombies and undead kind of things in Golgari, liches, insect kind of things, what would be interesting is if, because they live in a swamp, for them to have swamp monsters, like beasts and horrors in Golgari colors and support that tribally. That would be pretty interesting, because mm-hmm. I myself would be interested in swamp monsters in Golgari colors.
So someone like Swamp Thing or something like that?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, they live in a swamp. So it'll be interesting, like, wait, if you live in a swamp, then you also have a lot of water. So, but they don't have blue in their color pie. So it's a little odd, but I suppose, you know, I guess the swamp also fits with the color black.
Yeah, I mean, it is the color black.
It is. It's the basic land.
Even though a swamp is technically, you're right, does require copious amounts of water. Yeah, so. And it's vegetation, too, technically, because it is like a bog. So you're basically
mixing green. So it's also green.
Yeah, so it's also green. So, I mean, so what you're saying is, technically, Witherbloom is supposed to be Sultai masquerading as Golgari.
Yeah, so it's basically... I'm wondering if they're going to throw like a Sultai flavor in here. That would actually be quite interesting.
Oh, they might.
But not have the color blue, but have like, I'm looking at the, you know, mill three and then take one thing back to your hand. That's kind of a Sultai ability. That's a specialty mm-hmm. of that, which is self mill and then removing things from your graveyard or getting rid of them from play or bringing them to your hand. Cause that's just recursion. That's not reanimation.
Yeah.
The color here that actually is reanimation is the Orzhov color wizarding school instead, which I find kind of surprising because Orzhov is usually a little bit lighter on the reanimation effects, and it's normally Golgari that traditionally is the most reanimation heavy of all of the 10 guilds as a color pairing.
But you do end up in Orzhov colors getting a lot of flashback cards like Lingering Souls, which do fit under this, or Afterlife, which you are able to get the cards or value off cards once they die. So you're not necessarily getting the reanimation effects. Well, though, although you do have a couple of cards, again, I'm blanking on the names right now, but the 7 mana enchantment in Orzhov colors that allows you to bring a creature card back to your hand or to the battlefield every turn. I just cannot remember the name off the top of my head. It's in my collection somewhere.
Yeah, I have a card called called Furic Revival.
Oh yeah, Furic Revival. Yeah.
Yeah, which is from Eventide and brings all of it's also Orzhov in its colors, and it brings all your creatures onto the battlefield with -1/-1 counters on them.
So massive undying, yeah.
So basically it's like you've persisted them back onto the battlefield. Mm-hmm. Like there are cards like that. There no doubt there are Orzhov reanimation cards. Although I usually think, like I said, of Golgari as more of the reanimators and Orzhov as more like the sacrificers kind of. Mm-hmm. So it'll be kind of interesting to see what they do with the Witherbloom kind of thing. Will they have swamp monsters? Or will it be like zombie kind of stuff?
Well, I guess there's only one way to find out. We're going to have to see that when Strixhaven drops. So, speaking of Orzhov, thank you for bringing up that segue, Ryan. We're going to go over to Silverquill, and their motto is Sharp Style and Sharper Wit. So Silverquills wield the magic of words, from inspiring battle poetry to biting arcane insults. So this sounds like it should be in my wheelhouse just because I love being a jerk when I want to. No, not really, but I do love a good comeback when I can formulate one. So, stylish, intimidating, and tirelessly competitive, these mages are born leaders with a razor-sharp wit and natural charisma that can be used for good or ill. And their card from the command cycle is called Silverquill Command. Surprise, surprise. It's a sorcery, costs 2 white and a black, and you can choose 2. Target creature gets +3/+3, gains flying until end of turn, so kind of a Gift of Orzhova effect here. Return target creature card with mana value 2 or less from your graveyard to the battlefield. Again, just as Ryan said, a little bit of recursion, although it is limited. Target player draws a card and loses 1 life. Again, this is a main mono black thing here. Sign and Blood. Read the Bones. Again, a whole bunch of creatures do this sort of thing. And target opponent sacrifices a creature. And so basically, Silver Quill is doing everything Orzhov already does, or at least what mono black does. You're basically not getting any of the prototypical white effects here. Everything on here has a very black effect, I guess, except for that first one where the +3/+3 in games flying is kind of a white thing. And maybe the recursion works under this, but the other two are definitely within mono black's wheelhouse because that's exactly what they do all the time. Yeah. So Ryan, what are your thoughts on this one?
The first ability is straight mono white. It is a common white kind of thing. Basically turns your dude into an angel. There are probably 500 auras that do that, or instants that do that in white. Not as many in black. There probably are a few, but that is not exactly like black's kind of deal as much. The other three are straight black abilities. There's except for that reanimation one in the center, which actually is also white is like the secondary color for reanimating things. Mm-hmm. Not recursion, like you'd think, but recursion is more of a green thing, but white is actually second place when it comes to directly reanimating stuff from your graveyard. Mm-hmm. So that's the interesting thing about Orzhov. And, you know, you think there cannot be a more crazy enemy color pairing than white and black. Like, you'd think it'd be just like straight good and evil, like joined together. But there's actually a lot of commonalities between white and black. Specifically, how they react and play around with the graveyard. Mm-hmm. The one thing that's a little unusual, I think, though, is that last ability, which I don't see a whole lot of forced sacrifice in Orzhov as much.
But you normally do in mono black.
Yeah, that is like more of a mono black, and actually really is often seen in Rakdos. The I'm going to mm-hmm. make everyone sacrifice a creature, or you will sacrifice a creature thing. Like demand sacrifice, that is kind of usually found in a different color pairing. If this had like a tithe ability to it, then that would be a little bit more Orzhov-y, I think. But I also don't know if this is like the best color pairing for a bunch of writers or English majors, because I kind of feel like the color pairing for English majors would be more like Azorius. Like straight up Azorius is all based around bureaucracy and writing things down and people talking and locution, elegant locution is like mm-hmm. the whole thing with Azorius. You know, like, oh, what Azorius doesn't value brute force, they value fighting with words. That is literally the thing with that allied color pairing. Mm-hmm. Whereas Orzhov is kind of more like the value of duty, hierarchy, and obedience, and also demanding penance from other people.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I don't know about, like, witty insults. Usually I don't think of that in Orzhov. Like, usually I think of that being from... But, you know, maybe that's just my critique of it in terms of flavor. I mean, maybe they'll make it into something novel that forges new ground for Orzhov. Because Orzhov has been kind of limited in terms of basically three different strategies. Aristocrats, life gain, and also... okay, what was that third one? Maybe I'm forgetting something here. Oh, death and taxes.
Mm-hmm.
The idea of tithing people. Like, those are the three main archetypes of Orzhov, and there hasn't been a lot that's strayed from that, except I think of Arvad the Cursed, I guess,
okay,
from
yeah.
Dominaria. That was kind of unique, yeah. Based around legends, I suppose. That was kind of interesting. And then, of course, there's also Adaxos the Return, which deals with enchantments and making big tokens. Like, that's also kind of unusual for Orzhov. Although they are kind of secondary in token making, but yeah,
and don't forget Lurrus of the Dream Den in there as well
oh,
for being able to cast a whole bunch of very low cost things. But Even Lurrus kind of falls under that whole token, small creatures, aristocrats kind of shell, if you really want to look at it from that. It doesn't have to, but it certainly lends itself to that.
Yeah. And, you know, Orzhov token theme, I almost always think of Orzhov tokens as, even if it leans into tokens as a theme, it tends to always include Orzhov aristocrats in it, typically, to gain value from the tokens. Whereas, you know, Selesnya, there really isn't an aristocrat Selesnya. It's usually based around making tokens and enhancing tokens as a means to its own end, rather than sacking them or exploiting them for gain.
Well, I mean, not entirely there, Ryan. I did do a triple threat deck challenge on Asmira Holy Avenger when I first started the podcast, and she basically gets larger whenever you lose creatures. So I actually kind of sort of built an outline, a shell, if you will, for kind of a Selesnya aristocrats deck. So if your listener is out there and you're interested in taking a look at a potential Selesnya aristocrats deck, definitely take a look at one of my first episodes, the Triple Threat Deck Challenge featuring Asmira Holy Avenger.
Okay, that's pretty weird, I must admit. But, you know, I'm not going to say that's impossible to make a Selesnya aristocrats, because it's really possible to do aristocrats like in any color group, except for maybe, I'm thinking mono blue would be kind of hard to do that in. But in most color pairings, it would be able to do that. But when I do think of aristocrats, I think overwhelmingly either of like mono black, Orzhov, or Rakdos vampires, kind of. They have a
or
lot of
Mardu
that in there
as well.
Yeah, and Mardu, Rakdos vampires,
maybe. and Jund also goes into that, especially with like Korvold and whatnot.
Things. Yeah, so Jund kind of eats things, and they get bigger after eating things. So there's that. I'm kind of wonder here exactly like how they're gonna flavor out Silver Quill here, because the Orzhov people are not known for being particularly nice. That color pairing is not like the color pairing. Black white is not known as being like the most altruistic color pairing.
No, of course not.
But that could just be the influence of Orzhov there, but they're like not good people. in the flavor wise in the Magic universe, like that is like more black than I'd say white, and more into the negative aspects of both colors than the positive aspects of both colors. You know what I mean? Well, they flip it on their head, on its head, and then go with more positive associations of both white and black. Maybe they will go in the direction of buffing all your little creatures or something like that, instead of mercilessly killing them for small amounts of life gain or drawing of cards. That will be something that I'll just have to see with the release of the product, because I only have one card to work from.
Yeah, and you're right. It is going to be interesting to see how they portray themselves. But again, I feel like the stylish, intimidating, and tirelessly competitive definitely fits Orzhov to a T. Honestly, so I'm honestly not sure if we're going to see much different out of Silver Quill than we would out of Orzhov. Just there may be a slight spin on there that maybe they, since they can't sacrifice things in these color, they turn their, since there's supposed to be a college, maybe they turn to writing as a sort of like a manifesto way to write how they see their world. So kind of like philosophy, and you're right, philosophy, English, and writing down how they feel the world should run. I guess that's what I'm getting out of this.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, moving on from Silver Quill, we are going to go across the hall, and we are going to go to Quandrix, whose motto is Math is Magic. Now, again, I was terrible at magic in high school, so, again, I don't think this is really going to be for me, but again,
you mean terrible at math in high school, not terrible at magic.
No, sorry, terrible at math. You're right.
I hope you were terrible at magic. I was terrible at magic. Then you'd be a wizard, my friend.
You never knew the actual powers. But seriously though, Quandrix is the Simic color pairing, so the green and blue color pairing, and reads, Quandrix mages are ingenious math magicians. Say that five times fast. They study patterns, fractals, and symmetries to command power over the fundamental forces of nature. They'll solve a Rubik's Cube while contemplating the metaphysical properties of the universe and can recite every number of pi backwards. Again, their motto is math is magic. And their command card from the command cycle is Quandrix Command. Surprise, surprise. Costs one green and a blue for an instant, and you choose two. Return target creature or planeswalker to its owner's hand, so effectively unsummon out of mono blue. Counter target artifact or enchantment spell. Again, counter spell straight out of mono blue. Put two +1/+1 counters on target creature, straight out of mono green, and target player shuffles up to three target cards from their graveyard into their library. Again, this is a very blue effect, although mono green does have some interesting ways to work with this, as well as a few artifacts like Felden's Cane and Elixir of Immortality as well. So when I look at this card, it just feels like the most quintessential Simic card ever. Again, it brings everything blue does. It brings some of what green does. I'm surprised that it's not as balanced towards green. It's definitely heavier on the blue. Again, blue being the color of knowledge. Green, not really. So I feel like Quandrix is definitely leaning towards the blue side of things. Again, I think this is kind of the way Simic has been for quite a while here, is that even though green is in there, I will sit on the hill that I think blue is actually pulling ahead of green in a lot of ways. And I think Quandrix is definitely showing that, at least with this card, is that if three of the four modes on here are in blue, when you have green, who people consider to be the other most powerful color in Magic on here, I feel like this card definitely tilts towards blue, and if this math description here is any indication, that definitely seems to push towards the blue side of the color pie versus green. What do you think, Ryan?
I think it's interesting. I think that third ability on there is actually less a mono green ability and actually a Simic ability, like the counter placing. I mean, yes, there's always been an element of that in green. I remember there were cards like that in Mirrodin that put +1/+1 counters in mono green. But I think of +1/+1 counters as being absolutely archetypal when it comes to Simic. That is what Simic is known for. That is like their win condition, is sticking counters on things. As far as a lot of the other abilities there, first two are plain blue. Like, those ones are plain blue. The fourth one is definitely like a regrowth kind of thing, sort of. But it's actually just shuffling the three cards into your library. I think that last one there is kind of the weakest one and kind of more of a corner case compared to the first three, which I think are a bit stronger, actually. That could also just be because, like, when a target player shuffles three target cards from their graveyard to the library, I guess that could be graveyard hate as well as a little bit of recursion, but I don't think it would be as widely used as the first three, which I think are a lot stronger. In terms of Quandrix, Simic being the math people, I also think that's a little off, because when I think of Simic, I think of biology as a science. I think of them using science to genetically engineer stuff, not like them solving math problems. Math doesn't seem to me a color associated with green very much. That seems to be more of a color associated with instinct and biological processes rather than the human-made side of things. I actually think Izzet is more of the math color, ironically, here. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, as we know, you have your inspirational quality and your emotional quality, your breakthrough quality in red, and then you have your intellectual quality, and you have your studiousness, and you have your desire to improve and enhance things and sort of gain scientific knowledge in blue. And I think that kind of fits Izzet's kind of worldview, right? Whereas you throw green in there and suddenly you're talking about natural stuff rather than engineering. Like, I wouldn't associate Simic with with doing physics. Associate that more with Is It? Or maybe even also Azorius, actually. I think maybe the moral of the story is that everything fits within Azorius's color pool here. Not really. I think Quandrix would actually be more of like the description for Witherbloom, aside from the dead things, would fit more into the Quandrix camp. And then that their stuff would fit more into the Prismari camp. And Witherbloom doesn't, I don't think they have like a really good school comparison to make. I think that two color combination of black and green is kind of hard to make a real world analog to. Unless you're talking about like, actually, I don't know what the analog to that would be. I guess it's kind of more of a discussion of theme and flavor, really, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so you're right. It is interesting to see how this definitely fits more in Is It's color pie, because you have that mad scientist thing going on in Is It, which, you know, kind of fits with math. I mean, you know, Niv-Mizzet is commonly working in the lab trying to come up with some random new invention, but again, that requires some level of invention, some level of math. And so, yeah, you're right. This doesn't necessarily seem to fit. But again, on the other hand, since we've seen some changes, like out of the Lorehold, for instance, it's very possible that Wizards is going to be putting a new spin on Simic in this set. So I'm excited to see what they come up with for this one.
Yeah, I guess we'll just have to find out on this one as well. Kind of an oddball thing, if you ask me, though.
True. And speaking of Is It, we're going to go to the last of the five colleges, Prismari. Express yourself with the elements. And these, according to the website, are the theater kids of Strixhaven, and magic is how they express themselves. Their spells can be spectacles of raw creativity or meticulous artistic expressions. All the world's a stage, and whether their art is informed by mind or emotion, they always leave a lasting impression. So we're going to take a look at Prismari Command, which is one blue and a red for an instant. Again, choose two. Prismari Command deals two damage to any target. Straight at a mono red. Straight shock right there. Target player draws two cards, then discards two cards. Again, most of Frantic Search, which is a mono blue effect. Target player creates a treasure token. Again, usually straight out of mono blue. And destroy target artifact, which again is mostly mono red. So I feel like Prismari Command here is actually perfectly balanced between the two things that Is It always seems to work with, or at least the mono colors seem to work with. I don't necessarily see any of the modes, maybe besides the one that draws cards, that is a specifically Is It, or at least exists in the existing Is It domain here. But it's not a bad card. I mean, honestly, if you can shock something or create a treasure token and draw two cards or destroy a target artifact. Yeah, I mean, so if you draw two cards and create a treasure, all of a sudden you've drawn two cards for two mana effectively because you had to get the mana back. Or, again, you can draw cards, destroy an artifact. Well, all of a sudden that's an extremely powerful effect right there. Or you can even shock something if you had to create a treasure token, destroy target artifacts. I mean, I feel like out of all of the cards here, this kind of has, in some ways, maybe the best abilities in the widest variety of situations. I don't know. What are your thoughts on this?
I do think that the modes here are kind of, a lot of them are the best, most generically good. I mean, destroy target artifact, anytime you have that mode on anything, that's going to add some value to it. And then deals two damage, you can shock something, that's always useful. Draw two cards and discard two cards, basically rummage for two. Mm-hmm. That's generically useful a lot of times, although because you are including blue, I mean, you could always just draw those cards or ponder for them or something, which I think would be a little more generically useful. That third one is the definition of generically useful, which is generating a treasure token that you can sack for a mana of any color. That basically could allow you to pay off one of the price of the spell and get one of your mana back for it, making it a two-drop spell if you choose that as one of the modes. And also, treasure tokens are good, like in any color group, except maybe a little less so in green, because, you know, green already has all that ramp. But I do think that the second one is a little weaker than some of the other ones. But I also, my interesting observation on this is that every single one of these could fit into mono red. And there are three of them that I don't know if they would actually fit in the Mono Blue at all, unless you talk about Psionic Blast, that first one. Destroy target artifact, deals 2 damage. That second one, which really feels more like a mono red ability, which is essentially your Faithless Looting, and then a treasure token. That's also kind of red's thing, although I guess it's also a pirate thing, which pirates have a lot of red blue stuff to them. So that's arguably is it ish or maybe pirate ish. But I do think a lot of these are more in red's wheelhouse, because if I was to see that second ability as more like an actual blue ability, I'd expect it to just say either draw 1 card, then or draw 2 cards, discard a card, or just draw a card in many ways, because yeah, there's Merfolk Looter and stuff like that, but blue is generally known for not having an even parity draw and then discard. It's generally known for just straight up drawing or scrying. Where I guess that is also is it ground as well, but it's also seen in mono red, especially with all of their draw effects where you discard a card and then draw a card, you know. I think that in terms of flavor, I think that this fits theater pretty well. But I do also think that when I think of theater, I think of Rakdos. But that could just be the Ravnica thing association there. When I think about theater entertainment, I think about the circus of Rakdos. Even if black white Rakdos or black red Rakdos isn't particularly known for like being the color combo of creativity, I do think that when I think of is it, I think of stuff exploding rather than theater expressiveness. I think of explosions and electrical machines and wild experimentation, which I don't really associate with the theater a whole lot, but you know, maybe that's just me.
No, it seems fair. I mean, the flair for the dramatic, if nothing else, and is it is a pretty standard is it thing. I mean, I know that a lot of the characters and the color pairings there certainly seem to love being flamboyant. So this definitely seems to fit right in their wheelhouse.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
There's not a ton of cards here that they release. They only release 5. So like, there's not a ton to work on. It's all... This is a lot of speculating.
No, of course not. So, yeah. So, just wanted to quickly shift gears over to the Mystical Archive bit of Strixhaven. So, we're going to be seeing one of these cards per draft booster pack. Again, it's brand new art of existing cards. So, the ones that we've seen right now are Demonic Tutor, which is extremely powerful, Opt, and Swords to Plowshares, just amongst others. And there's going to be like 60, 63, something like this. Of these, and one's going to be included in every draft booster pack. So so anyone who's opening a draft booster pack in theory has an opportunity to pull a Demonic Tutor, which is quite honestly absurd given the fact that that's currently a $40 card right now.
Yeah, and I think that these are basically masterpiece additions, and they remind me of like the Masterwork stuff from
Kaladesh.
Kaladesh.
Yeah.
I would say that these are in that style in many ways. Because when we saw cards with alternate frames in Kaldheim, for instance, they were all cards from that set and they were all done Nordic style. Whereas these are kind of like generically powerful or famous Magic cards that have alternate borders and alternate arts for them.
Mm-hmm.
Which seems more like the Kaladesh kind of thing. And also Mark Tieden's artwork for Swords to Plowshares is really awesome. It has laser beams coming out of the moon and hitting the sun, which then has laser beams coming out of the sun and then hitting a sword. And then the sword is like its essence is being drained into what looks like a hoe.
Some kind of scythe or something.
This is like the best artwork for Swords to Plowshares I've seen. I mean, for one, most of the Swords to Plowshares are usually some sad person holding a sword.
Well, I mean, it's actually literally a sword going to a plowshare. So, I mean, yeah. it actually fits the name for once.
I mean, the art that came from the one they use in Commander Legends kind of illustrates that point pretty well, where it shows like a person with a sword and then they're like being morphed into a person with a with a hoe or whatever, like mm-hmm. that's pretty close. I think the original artwork for Swords to Plowshare, where it shows that guy in the field with a scythe, that's mm-hmm. like also much closer on flavor in terms of what it expresses, but this is kind of a useful second there. I like the art. I also like the card frames that they have for these. Mm-hmm. They remind me a lot of the card frames for Kaldheim, where they have the color white or another kind of color, and then they have a contrasting color, which, you know, the color that's that corresponds with the color of the spell itself, and they're kind of used in contrasting colors there, and I do like that. And they're also extended arts too as well.
Mm-hmm. And that always is nice, because we players seem to love our extended art cards. Wizards has been doing that with every set, especially the collector boosters, and they just look really nice. So I think we're going to be looking forward to pulling those out of packs here real soon.
Yeah, and the Japanese alternate arts are particularly interesting here. Particularly the Demonic Tutor. That one's pretty hardcore metal right there. Like, you compare the one in English versus the Japanese version, and the one in English there is pretty definitely not metal, and the one next to it is just this hardcore Oni creature with a huge club, just going, ah, like, he's going Super Saiyan over there. So, yeah, I think that there's definitely a big difference there between the two regional releases.
Yeah, that you're right. That is a very interesting looking thing, and as well as the Swords to Plowshares also definitely makes a lot of sense as far as the Japanese release too.
Yeah, this is a samurai dude.
Yeah, so we're gonna be excited to see how that all unfolds, and when we go to Strixhaven here in a couple months. All right, and I wanted to wrap up the show just with a quick talk about the change from converted mana cost. CMC is technically no more. Everything as of, I think, earlier this week has now been eroded or will be eroded soon to mana value. I just wanted to hear some of your thoughts on this change. Given the fact that you've been playing this game for so long, CMC is kind of drilled in your brain by this point. But me as a new player, I remember really struggling with the concept of CMC when I first started playing. It didn't quite make sense. It's not spelled out on the card anywhere. So I just wanted to hear your thoughts on mana values, and if this is easier to remember, or if you think it would be easier for new players to understand versus converted mana cost.
I think it's going to be harder for new players to understand, because everything in Magic is worded around the idea of cost. Like, this spell, this costs this much, this costs this much less, this costs this way. Are they all going to be changed to this values this much less, this is valued in this way? No, they're not. Instead, we're only going to use the word value for one given concept, which is the idea of converted mana cost. And also, converted mana cost as an expression is self-explanatory of what it actually refers to, which is the generic converted, or the cost of a card converted entirely into generic mana. So when you say CMC7, it means any combination of colors or things that would be equivalent to 7 generic mana. Mana value? Like, what does that come from? When is the term value used anywhere else in Magic? I don't know. I can't think of very many other things that refer to a value specifically. No,
typically when we talk about value, especially as EDH players, we're typically talking about trying to get a bunch of benefit out of a single card or a sequence of cards that we consider value. But again, it wasn't a keyword, it was just kind of a concept, a strategy. It wasn't necessarily something that had anything to do with anything in the game. But I suppose if you look at the way Wizards has now keyworded mill, for instance, which used to be a fan term, which was then turned into an actual evergreen keyword not that long ago, I suppose it makes sense where we go with mana value, is that it kind of changes things and it shortens the text box a little bit, along with the the huge change on that Demonic Tutor that you were just talking about is the fact it just says shuffle. It doesn't say shuffle your library. It just says search your library for a card, put that card in your hand, then shuffle. Again, it doesn't say your library, it's just shuffle. So these are two interesting changes. Obviously, Wizards is trying to see if they can shorten some of the text boxes on some of these cards. It'll be interesting to see how new players over the next year or two get into the game and see if it makes any more sense than saying converted mana cost and shuffle your library.
I mean, shuffle, that makes some sense because it's basically just abbreviating what everyone always knows, because graveyard order doesn't really matter anymore. They haven't used graveyard order in a long time, so they're not talking about shuffling your library or your graveyard, I mean. Because the last cards, I believe, that were printed that referred to graveyard order were back before they even changed over to the modern border on cards. So that hasn't been relevant for a long time. Mm-hmm. The only order that matters anymore is the order of your library for all intents and purposes, unless you're playing with a card that specifically talks about graveyard order. So they just assume at this point that everyone knows they're talking about shuffling your library, and you don't. They just assume that someone's not going to go over and start shuffling their graveyard up and putting it back down. You know,
yeah.
That's less dumb, in my opinion, than changing something to mana value, because, you know, like with the mill example you talked about, everyone has been using the term mill for ages. It's been used ever since the card Millstone was printed way, way back, like what, Fallen Empires or something like that.
Yeah.
Like, people have used milling things for ages. It's a player term that has been in widespread use forever. And all they did was just change that mechanic so that it just referred to it by the term everyone already uses. But mm-hmm. in mana value, is that really that much of a shortening? It takes off, takes out the word cost.
Yeah.
And it takes out the word converted. But I think it actually obfuscates it even more, because now people are going to be like, okay, everything in Magic refers to the costs of things, like the cost to cast a spell. What the hell is value? What is mana value? What does that mean? What is a mana value? Can you explain that? Versus, like, people just being like, yeah, well, converted mana cost is the same as a normal mana cost, except, you know, in this case, you're converting it into generic and just stating it that way, as opposed to stating the whole thing out.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that was pretty self-explanatory. This way, it's not self-explanatory at all what that refers to. And I feel like it's a top-down change on the part of Wizards, you know, rather than a bottom-up change on the basis of players, because no one I ever know has ever referred to the converted mana cost of a card by the term mana value. I've never heard anyone use that term. So it's probably made up by R&D or the Rules Committee. It's probably not made by players, that's for sure.
Yeah, we'll honestly see, again, like I said, if this is going to influence things going forward. I agree with you, Ryan. I don't like this change either. I would prefer the cost of a card to cast being the cost. So I was perfectly fine once I understood it, CMC, because it's converted mana cost. And when you say mana value, we can then say you get value off the mana value. And as soon as you say value twice in the same sentence, you kind of start losing track of the whole cost part of this. So again, we'll see where this goes, and I don't like it.
That's a good point. And I think the problem here is that the way value is used in the Magic community talks about things like a card's power level, relative, its role in the metagame, things that are outside of the actual game itself. Ooh, you know, how much a card costs on the secondary market, its value. What's the card's value? What are you evaluating it at? What's its value and utility in your deck?
Oh, that's you're right. Used. Yeah. Oh, man.
It's going to make things just weird. Like, what's the mana value of this card? The heck? I'm going to just use the term CMC, like, forever. I don't care what Wizards does. And if I hear young whippersnappers calling it mana value, I'll be like, it is CMC. Use the term converted mana cost, CMC of this value. I mean, it is the shortest abbreviation possible, just CMC. I don't know. Seems pretty efficient to me, but, you know, I'm just a grapey old person, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I'm probably going to keep using CMC. And, you know, as long as we know what mana value is supposed to be, that it's CMC, it's going to be fairly easy for us to be able to keep tabs on things. But you're right. It's very complex when you say, this is the mana value of a card. This is the value of a card in the deck. This is the financial value of a card in your deck. This is the financial value of your card on the open market. All of a sudden, you know, you could have four different ways of saying value out of that card, and none of them have anything to do with each other. So that is just where this all comes. I mean, you could say financial cost to purchase a card, but you're not going to really ask how much does that card cost. Is you typically we typically say how much is that card? Period, or you know, question mark, or just how much? I mean,
in the context of a game, if you say how much does that cost, you're usually not referring to how much it costs in dollar value. You're pretty much always referring to what's its CMC.
Yeah.
How much did you spend to play this thing? You know.
Yeah, versus, hey, I mean, well, you can't ask for actual financial cost.
If you ask what the value of a card is, someone's going to just look at you weird and be like, I paid, how much did I pay for that?
$2. I paid $40 for this demonic tutor, and now I'm casting it for two mana.
That's the value of a card. If you ask someone what their value of their card is in a game of Magic, they're going to tell you the dollar value of your card. They're not going to tell you what the converted mana cost of your card is.
I paid $40 for this demonic tutor, and I'm going to value it for two. I'm actually going to foretell this card and then value it for two.
No one freaking uses this term. No one freaking uses this term at all. It's not a real term.
I just don't like it, but I guess we're going to just be sitting here for the foreseeable future with this. We're just going to have to get used to it. All right. Well, that'll wrap things up. Again, I want to thank Ryan for being on the episode today. It's been great as always.
Oh, yeah. Thanks for inviting me on, man.
Yeah, no problem. It's always fun being able to talk to you on these Control Room episodes. So if you want to listen to more of the MTG in Quarantine podcast, you can find me on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Casts, and wherever fine podcasts are found. You can also find me on Twitter at MTG in Quarantine. So for Ryan and for myself, my name's MJ. You've been listening to the MTG in Quarantine podcast. Have a great rest of your day.